The Foresight Institute was founded in 1986 by Dr. Eric Drexler and Christine Peterson. It created and popularized the concept of nanotechnology. We've been around for nearly 20 years already. 4 books published, many inspired. We've published the Foresight Safety Guidelines for Molecular Manufacturing, similar to the Biotech Safety Guidelines of the Asilomar Conference, numerous white papers, top 5 nanotech website, many update newsletters, 12 major conferences, 18 Feynman Prizes. We helped catalyze the U.S. NNI, extensive placement in press worldwide. We reach a lot of people, 14,000 plus via email. We're a think tank, a public education, public policy development support, and public interest organization. And we also have a research and development arm. I've always been told that the best way to give a presentation is to first tell people what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. So I'm going to look at all of this. I'm not going to propose a particular definition for nanotechnology. We all have a sense of what it is. We know that it's about things that happen at a size and scale which give rise to new properties with quantum effects and new physical ratios and relationships. It allows us to build systems based on new properties. It gives us the possibility to start thinking about nanoscale engineering. Only last week there was this announcement about the nano car and nano lorry or truck. So let's take a look at the military outlook for nanotech. My thesis there will be that initially we'll be upgrading existing weapon systems and weapons, but we also are looking at potential new weapons of mass destruction. So where are we in nanotechnology in general? We're very, very early. We are where IT was before the integrated circuit. That's the early 60s. We're where biotech was before recombinant DNA. That's the early 70s for that industry. We also want to distinguish the long term of what nanotechnology can do and may do, and the near term. Today's building blocks are nanotubes, fullerenes, nanoparticles, quantum dots, dendrimers, and soft lithography. And we have these overlapping fields of science, which together, especially at the cross points, give rise to new capabilities. There's a lot of funding. There's a lot of patenting being done. So lots of patents being issued, and if you think that the research in China, for instance, is reported to be about 6 times more than they actually admit to, there's a lot of research going on, and ever more patents being issued. Venture capital investment is up, lots of players getting into the game. For nanotechnology in general, and of course that applies to military applications, looking today at tools, composite materials, coatings, catalysts. We have market impacts in aerospace, medicine, memories. You know that it's a pervasive technology, and we already have some major industry players jockeying for position. We're looking at chemicals and materials. We're into medical and pharmaceutical applications with prosthetics, automotive, aerospace, of course, and defense. Space systems are also affected, much more capability for bringing things to orbit, so it's cheaper to go to space. IT and telecommunications, virtually everything is going to be affected and is already starting to be affected by nanotechnology. Even the consumers are already starting to get products into their hands. Here you can see an overview of top products listed by Forbes in 2003. Which all have some nano aspect to them with attendant benefits. In terms of capabilities, and this is directly relevant to military, we're looking at the advent of better fuel cells, hydrogen storage, solar cells, more efficient distributed energy, higher efficiency devices in general, and then for water, inexpensive decentralized water purification, rolling back the damage to the environment. Health and longevity will be impacted with inexpensive rapid diagnostics in the field if we want to, new methods of targeted drug delivery, etc., etc. So information technology is also going to be importantly empowered with smart networks, distributed networks, mobile networks. Every aspect of computing is going to be boosted by nanotechnology. So some key findings about nanotechnology in general is that it's not science fiction anymore. It's here today. It will affect almost everything over time. The initial impact will be subtle and gradual, as with plastics. The R&D funding is unprecedented in academic, government, and industrial sectors. It's spread already across the globe. Patent filing is exploding worldwide, as I showed you in the graphs. And the pace of development is accelerating. Because all these fields are influencing each other, advances in tools will further speed the acceleration. We're already quite a ways away from Don Igler's work with arranging atoms in the form of a company logo in 1990. Having looked at the short and medium term, I'd also like to give you a little bit of a peep at the longer term, or at least the results of Foresight's efforts at what we call explorative engineering, which is not dissimilar to what Leonardo da Vinci did back in his day in trying to imagine what could be done with technological capabilities that you can identify today. Some of the building blocks that we're looking at that physics and chemistry tells us we should be able to build are things like planetary gears, mechanical connectors and transfers, ion pumps, and fine motion controllers. Think of it as the finger at the end of a robot arm. And that leads us to assemblies and assemblers. With convergent assembly, that's the bottom-up approach, obviously, we're looking at the possibility for a 100-stage pairwise assembly process to convert molecular-scale parts into ton-scale products. And I have a nice video for you. Is this science fiction? Well, if a 30-year projection sounds like science fiction, it may be wrong. If it does not sound like science fiction, then it is definitely wrong. It seems that we're not totally alone in thinking in that direction. The EU Nano Roadmap project is to cover molecular nanotechnology and nanofactories. It says things like, these enormous benefits are coupled with potential dangers. Molecular nanotechnology will allow the rapid prototyping and inexpensive manufacture of a wide variety of powerful products with the potential to disrupt many aspects of society and politics. In the military field, minute but powerful weapons and surveillance devices are a possibility, as is environmental damage provoked by the extensive use of control of these technologies could lead to abusive market restrictions or create a demand for black market almost impossible to stop, as due to reduced size, small nanofactories could easily be smuggled and potentially dangerous. There is a wider phenomenon happening, and that is called the NBIC technology convergence. The NSF, the National Science Foundation, and the DOC in the United States has issued reports and conferences, 400-plus page. You can find the free PDF of this online, and it has been published by Kluwer in the meantime as well. EU Commission has published reports on NBIC. And an important thing to realize about that is that this convergence is accelerating exponentially. The implication of all of this is that there is even a possible so-called technological singularity ahead of us. I'll say more about that in a moment. That's the first conference organized by the NSF and the DOC. As you see, the focus of the NBIC convergence seems to be the augmentation of the human being, the enhancement of humans way beyond therapy. We don't only cure people anymore, we give them abilities beyond therapy for their mind, for their body, for all their performance aspects. Obviously, that has direct military implications. The DoD was there. The reason why this is important to realize here is to stretch our horizons a bit just beyond nanotechnology. These fields, nano, bio, info, and cogno, are fundamentally interdependent. And the lay of the converging land is that in this century that we've started in, the things that we're really going to work with are bits, genes, atoms, and neurons, and the combinations thereof. Some results of this NBIC convergence are wearable PCs for augmented reality, like here, where you get computer imagery registered and overlaid on your normal view, giving you more information than you just can see with your bare eyes. Exoskeletons for augmenting the physical power of normal human beings, but also of soldiers, increasing their carrying capability, and direct military application, study under DARPA, sustained optimal cognitive performance for soldiers, keeping them awake far longer and in optimal functioning conditions. Brain-airplane interfaces, talk about science fiction, huh? But this is already stuff that's been reported on in 2003. Even more science fiction-like is neural prosthesis, where a team in Los Angeles is replacing the hippocampus, which is the part of your brain modulating memory, is replacing that with a neural prosthesis in a black box approach. After the hippocampus, they will tackle other parts of the brain. Maybe one day they will replace all parts of the brain with chips. Now, I'm going to say something pretty provocative, but I'm going to set it up a little bit, because the gentleman who's actually saying it has been presented by President Clinton with the National Medal of Technology, the nation's highest award for technological achievement. Basically what he's saying right now, he's just published a book, is that there is a technological singularity ahead. All of this converging technologies, and actually coming all the way from 2 million years before now, when we have unaugmented hominids running around killing animals, the number and sophistication of human augmentation technologies has been on an exponentially accelerating curve, and the curve is expected to go right up. And what will happen then? Well, at least Ray Kurzweil and others believe that the tech singularity more or less means AI finally waking up, emerging. And not just human-level AI, because soon after we have human-level AI, we will have superhuman-level AI. These AIs will create their next generations, and it won't take them 20 years to produce a generation. So, interesting stuff ahead. You can pick up the book. It's been a crazy seller. The singularity is near, about when humans transcend biology. This is also a direct illustration of this NBIC convergence happening. I would encourage you not to sneer at this. It took me some time to warm to it, but there is something there. I encourage you to take exponentially accelerating convergence of technology seriously enough. Give it some thought, buy the book, read it very critically, and see what this man has to say. He's not alone. There is already an Institute for Accelerating Change organizing conferences since 2004, having a website with a Singularity Watch. Interesting stuff happening. Maybe even President Kennedy was a bit foresighted in this direction. He said in his famous speech, setting in motion the Moon Project, he said, "Most of the scientists that the world has ever known are alive and working today. This nation's own scientific manpower is doubling every 12 years at a rate of growth more than three times that of our population as a whole. We are producing science and technology at a rate which is totally unheard of and which is exponentially accelerating on itself." So stuff is going to happen faster and faster and faster. Now, let's tie this back a bit to military nanotech again. The near-term military apps are upgrades to existing weapons and support systems, nanomaterials and nanoscale filtration membranes. This is an interesting technology, I believe, for military in general. There's a company that I was personally involved with, and still am, by the way, called Covalent Industrial Technologies. They're in Silicon Valley. They have pioneered, over the last 7 years, nanoscale filtration. They are now able to chemically and mechanically tune pores so that you can filter any liquid with up to single atom precision. Applications for that are, for instance, in the medical field, where there is a wearable kidney, which you would wear under your arm. Basically, a wearable kidney means bye-bye to dialysis sessions. They have this under the arm version, and they also have a version which is worn like a fat, bulky watch, which permanently, 24/7, interfaces with your bloodstream and cleans your blood. So nanoscale filtration applications include the wearable kidney, water desalination, important for military, water purification, same thing, breathable NBC protection clothing, finally something, you know, that you don't sweat yourself silly in, wearable anti-dehydration systems, the still suits of the Dune science fiction. Well, some version of that is on its way. Especially in the Middle East, anti-dehydration would be quite welcome. Advanced rebreathers for indefinite length underwater presence, think of them as artificial gills, and superior gas mask, which would be comfortable to wear. An interesting nexus for early nanotech is what they call the augmented warrior, the nanosoldier, the super soldier, or even the human tank. And it is the NSI in Boston, which is focusing a lot of research on this. Obviously, nanotech bulletproof clothing gets into that. They're basically on a mission to protect the soldier of the future with an impregnable exoskeleton. I showed you images of an exoskeleton earlier. This 21st century armor will also impart superhuman strength, reflexes, and endurance. It will sense its environment with molecular precision and administer chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and other potions directly to the human inside based on pre-programmed stimuli or other command and control signals. Look at all the aspects where nanotech will impact this so-called human tank. All the way down to bullets, because, for instance, here, lightweight cartridge casings. If a bullet weighs less because you have a stronger but more lightweight casing, you can take more bullets with you. So ISN has a very wide-ranging set of research projects, which it all ties back to empowering or augmenting the soldier. Looking at a bit longer term, with the very advanced capabilities of nanotechnology, we're talking 20 or 30 years in the future now. This is a design called, again, exploratory engineering respirocytes. Basically, they're small pressurized gas tanks with features on their outside which can give timed and controlled release of oxygen into the blood. Basically, if you put a big syringe into yourself, this should enable you to not have to use your lungs for about 4 hours. Imagine what you can do with that. James is describing nanotech weapons. The Pentagon considers nanotech a very high priority. The White House endorses nanotech and wants anti-terror uses to be the big focus. Longer term, nanotech development brings us the possibility of intentional global ecophagy, or the threat of ecocide. In a paper which you can find online, Robert Freitas, an associate of the Institute, has outlined some early nano weapons of mass destruction concepts. I won't go into detail, I'll happily do that offline, but you have varieties of gray goo or ecophagic attacks. You have aerovores, gray dust, which blanket the atmosphere so that you have 100% atmospheric opacity within 2 days. Gray plankton, gray lichens, and direct biomass killers. The big problem here is something called asymmetric destructive capability. That means that you have little resources needed to destroy a lot. Large-scale destruction with small-scale resources. Again, the NBIC convergence reveals exponentially increasing asymmetry of this destructive capability. To give you an example, for building one of those four early nano-WMD concepts, all you need is the mastery of self-replicating nanobot tech, you know, give it 10 or 20 years, 4 mediocre PhDs put in an attic somewhere with 4 off-the-shelf supercomputers for about 4 months, maybe less, a standard nanofab, and a network of people to globally seed the replibots into the atmosphere or otherwise. So you basically have asymmetric destructive capability on steroids. Now, where does this get worrying? This is a quote by Admiral David Jeremiah, retired from the Navy, former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I still have this picture of 5 smart guys from Somalia or some other non-developed nation who see the opportunity to change the world, to turn the world upside down. Military applications of molecular manufacturing have even greater potential than nuclear weapons to radically change the balance of powers. U.S. Congress seems to think in the same way. The greatest danger of another catastrophic attack in the United States will materialize if the world's most dangerous terrorists acquire the world's most dangerous weapons. Britain's Astronomer Royal seems to think in the same direction. I'm not going to read that one. And the White House. We are menaced less by fleets and armies than by catastrophic technologies in the hands of the embittered few. And that's not just Al-Qaeda, by the way. It is inevitable that terrorists will obtain weapons of mass destruction and that they will use them against us. Donald Rumsfeld. There's some good news as well. In the same paper by Freitas, it's outlined that each of these 4 possible WMDs can be countered and that precautions, prevention, early warning, and effective defensive countermeasures are at least possible. Another piece of good news is that nanotechnology could augur in an era where, by choice, if we decide to do that, we could go to non-lethal warfare. Life is precious, not only the lives of one's own troops and civilians, who happened to be in the war zone, but also the lives of enemy troops. Guess how much goodwill and PR value there is in not killing your enemy. Effective intervention with zero lethality and zero collateral damage. Nonetheless, all this change and innovation brings challenges and opportunities for global and regional security. Nanotech-based threats from terrorist assassinations to the deployment and usage of nanotech-based WMDs with this asymmetric destructive capability are on the table. So we're looking, by implication, challenges and opportunities to our institutions and societies. The central challenge here is how can we allow and enable societies to benefit from the exponentially accelerating technological convergence which is coming while safeguarding them from new ADC-based threats. One way to do that is to go towards MAPS, which is a concept which I'm proposing, which is mutually assured, permanent, pervasive surveillance using nanotechnology. What would the world look like if we could really and fully know what our opponents, what the enemies are doing all the time and in real time? Nanotech, together with NBIC convergence, will enable unprecedented, highly fine-grained, pervasive surveillance capability. Two companies which are already paving the way is Panoptic Systems and Physical Optics Corporation. Panoptic Systems, I'm the co-founder of that, the inventor of the see-through surveillance technology, which you'll see in a moment. The idea is that we are overwhelmed with data coming in, so my background is in virtual reality. I came up with a way, I have an interactive demo of this as well, which I can show you offline, where basically you can see through everything and only see what you want to see from a military perspective or from a security perspective. I filed for a preliminary patent with the U.S. Patent Office for this. You can use this in the battlefield, you can use this for homeland defense, you can imagine many defenses. Currently it's based on 360-degree cameras, many of them placed around rooms, etc., and other sensors. A company that we're working with, POC, is already developing, this was ready for commercialization since 2003, using smart mobile networks, using semi-autonomous robots, which look a bit like big insects. Later on, they will look like, on casual inspection, they will be unmistakable for normal insects, and I'm talking 15, 20 years. These things can position sensors wherever you want them. And in 40 years, you may have what they call smart dust. You go and dust your enemy country with dust, with sensing capabilities, and you basically have eyes and ears and other sensors wherever you want them. And of course you have to synthesize all of that and look at it. So we're looking at a perilous transition to a potentially better new world. The big danger is in the transition. The transition between pre-nanotech, pre-NBIC convergence world and post-NBIC. Once we're past it, once we're past the singularity, once we have absorbed this superhuman AI or have become superhuman AI, we should be in a new steady state. But the transition, that's the really dangerous place because there's an enormous amount of disruptions happening in parallel. Societal disruptions, economic disruptions, people losing their jobs by the millions. ADC-based disruptions of local to global military and security equilibria. So what's needed is planning and coordination with civil society so that we may all proceed through the transition period as safely as possible. As Warren Buffett said, predicting rain doesn't count, building arcs does. We have a proposal for how to deal with this, a roadmap initiative, which gives a vision for future end states, which articulates steps from current state to end state, illuminates what to focus on today, which could be the basis for R&D and the usage agenda. The important thing for the military aspect there is if you want to be able to defend yourself against nano-based attacks, you have to deeply understand the offensive capability. Be capable of knowing what the offensive capability is so that you can defend yourself against it. We need collaboration between all the stakeholders. We have a lot to think about, a lot to work together about. The stakes are high, and it's in our hands. I promised you that I would show you what I told you. That's where it is. Here are some more resources, which I'll be happy to give you offline. Thank you for your attention.